Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friends over at The Gaslight on the Hill, located on Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, go over there and check it out. It's a beautiful recording studio attached to a bar, shares a wall with Cha Cha Chow, so you can come over, have some cold drinks, watch one of your favorite bands record, eat some tacos, and just have a great time. There's all kinds of music going on over there, and a lot of unique recordings and things. It's really something special for St. Louis, and so get out and support them. Check it out. Full listings on GaslightSTL.com. Follow along on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and again, everything GaslightSTL.com. Also want to tell you about my friends at Music Record Shop. They have a brand new location in the Zach Building over... It used to be the old Plush building, if you may remember that location. So check it out. Go on over there, visit them. They got new records in every Friday. A lot of live in stores and all kinds of things. So yeah, you can shop online 24/7, musicrecordshop.com. Also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Michael Bivens, audio engineer producer with Redwood Studios, and I play guitar on Connable Road, and this is the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out today at Redwood Studios with Michael Bivins. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. I you know, a lot of these start this way, and it's been really cool and very exciting for me, but I've been constantly meeting more and more new people doing this show.
Yep.
And you're a guy that I've been aware of for a while. I know, I'm sure we crossed paths a long time ago in you know, shows and stuff. And that's, it's just kind of crazy how, like, I've done a couple of these where I get to talking to a band and, like, I'm like, yeah, I went to this show, and I describe it, and they're like, yeah, we were on that show. And it's like, I'm like, oh, well, sorry. You know, not that I,
right.
It wasn't no disrespect. It's just that it's kind of crazy. We were all in the same room together before. And we didn't know each other then, but now we're, you know, now we're friendly and stuff. And it's like, so it's really cool to have that. But I've, like I said, I've been noticing your name more, some of your work out of the studio and stuff here and things. I thought it'd be fun to hang out and get to know more about you and what you're up to and
yeah.
And stuff. But like I was saying, you've been playing as a musician for several years. You play with Accountable Road.
Yep.
And I know the you know, the band, and I've seen you guys down at Pops several times and things. I spent a lot of nights down there with Hollow Point Heroes and Exit 714 and all these guys, and so I know you guys shared many bills together. I'm sure we spent many nights at Pops together, even though we didn't know each other then. But
right.
So. Is that where's all this? Is that where it all started? I mean, you just get to playing and want to start recording, or
take it all the way back to the start?
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to music as a kid, all that type of stuff. You know, dad's old records and that kind of thing. He taught me how to play drums when I was like 7 or 8, and I played for a little while, and then I didn't really play again until randomly I started playing in high school again. My senior year, and I played for about a year or so. You know, just come home every day after school and just, like, put on records and jam to them, you know, just play along. And then when I went to college and moved out, I couldn't take a drum kit with me, so I figured I might as well just start playing guitar now, because I can, you know, fit a guitar in an apartment. And so then I started playing guitar and would always, like, catalog these riffs that I thought were cool. And it's, side note, it's kind of hilarious to go back and listen to them now, you know, just after, that was probably 15 years ago.
Right.
Just, like, hearing what I thought was good, you know, it's like looking at finger paintings.
Sure.
You know, and so I guess that was kind of how I sort of built my writing chops and playing chops, so to speak. So, you know, eventually I would write my own little pieces of music, and because I had a background in drums and it's this new background in guitar, I would, you know, hear the drum parts in my head as I was writing all these guitar riffs and chords and songs and stuff. And so I made this little really crappy home recorded demo thing that I played everything on, and that was kind of my first multi-track recording experience. And it was cool. Like, it, you know, it was a lot of fun. Like, I didn't, you know, didn't really know what I was doing. Had you know, kind of one microphone, and you just fake your way through it, and it's okay, I guess, at the time.
Right.
But, you know, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And after I did that, I was just studying more, more about the process and the tools and all that stuff with recording, and I decided to get an internship at Smithley Productions in Maplewood, and I spent a couple of semesters there. Had a couple of bands come in, and we made a band. One band was a punk band called Stuck on Third, and, you know, they were hometown buddies of mine, so
that was
kind of cool to do that. And and then the second band that I recorded there was Avex, and we did their first record there at Smithley, and it was okay, you know, same type of thing for me as far as, you know, recording chops, you know, same type of thing. And I mean, like, as my very first time, it was still not very good, but it was better. The overall thing had kind of, the ship had risen a little bit.
Right.
You know, and, but still, you know, again, listening back to it, it's like kind of cringeworthy, you know, just yeah. from an engineering. I love the songs. I think they're great. But, you know, always, you know, your own worst critic.
Oh,
so.
For sure. Yeah, I listened back to some of these early episodes I recorded with this, and you know, of course you hear all the ands and ums and everything else.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, man, why do I keep, you know, saying this dumb stuff? And
yeah.
But yeah, no, you obviously.
Yeah, 300 tries later, you're probably a lot better.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know. Hopefully. So, but no, I agree, man. It's, you know, we all got to start somewhere, though.
Right,
so
right.
And obviously you want your next project to be better than the one before. And
yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, and that kind of gradually or continually getting better and better.
Yeah, you just try to not make the same mistakes over and over again. You know, like making mistakes is kind of that's where the magic is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, the 10,000 hour rule of, you know, mastering your craft or whatever, like, that's not just 10,000 hours of success after success. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's finding all the ways that don't work.
Yeah.
You know, as they say.
Yeah. So, I listen to these back and, when I'm editing and of course I edit and then, or, you know, put it together. So I've, you know, listened while I recorded, listened while I edit, and then I listen to the final product, and it allows me to sort of like analyze myself and again, try to improve on that. So do you do a lot of that too? I mean, when you listen back to that record, like, oh, I could have done this better or done that, you know, something different.
I used to. I mean, with the stuff that's that old, I don't really listen to it too much anymore, except for just kind of nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, think back and like, oh, that was fun. Like, how it's like looking at old photos, you know, like, oh, look how young we were there. Look how much fun we had.
Sure.
That sort of thing. But as far as like criticizing the work, I used to. I mean, and I guess I still do that to a degree. It's just, I don't have to go back that far,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I've been doing it so long that I'll really only listen to maybe the most recent 2 years or whatever. Shorter amount of time is my point. But like maybe 5 years ago, within that span of, you know, there was maybe one or two or three, maybe 4 years where I was just like, I would get really intense about it, about like self critiquing my work and like comparing it to all these super huge professional you know, records and stuff. And for better or worse, you know, I think it overall probably helped. But as far as like, it's not the greatest thing for your self-esteem,
right?
You know, to go as hard as I did, as you know, with the self-critiquing. But you know, better or worse, here I am. You know, I like the work that I do now.
Yeah,
of course, in a year I'll probably disagree with that, but
sure,
you know, I mean, it's kind of like if you look back and you think you did a great job, you might be in trouble.
Yeah,
you know, just with taking the idea that you're always supposed to be improving and, you know, that sort of thing. So
sure. Yeah, I mean, I think probably also, you know, humbling, you know, to see some of the stuff you did. And then, like, of course, you know, you realize, like, oh, I'm striving to be this and things that, like, it's going to give you something to keep pushing yourself towards and things that want to be, but like those records you're listening to and stuff, those other ones and things. But yeah, man. So, you said you were at school playing guitar. Does that mean you went to school for engineering?
Well, I went to school originally for mass communications, which is sort of, I went into mass comm because there was audio involved. I don't think I knew that at the time. But that, looking back on it, that's why I wanted to go into mass comm. I didn't really care about like news reporting or interviewing people. It just wasn't my thing. And so I stopped doing that, and then I get into like computer stuff. You know, I don't know the term, networking, and the major was called Computer Management Information Systems. So
yeah,
whatever that means. And I was in that for maybe a year, maybe year and a half. And one night I literally woke up in a cold sweat. You know, I was like just in this huge panic. I don't know if I had a nightmare or what happened, like, but I just woke up and I was like, man, this is not right. Like, this is not right. It's not what I want to be doing. And so I got out of bed and I, you know, middle of the night, you know, researched everything that I could about what I could do locally as far as like classes at classes for recording and audio and all that stuff. And I thought about going to Webster, but I was kind of priced out of it. So I stayed at SIUE and took everything that they had, you know, involving audio and recording. And I spent a summer there, like at the theater, doing a couple of musicals there, doing front of house and audio for that. And so anyways, back to the nightmare story, like, so I was researching all these classes and I went the very next day and dropped everything that I was doing and changed the courses and, you know, changed the path of what I was doing. Like, which, you know, as an adult, to do something that drastic as far as like life path on a dime like that, like, that's probably terrifying.
Oh, you
know,
sure.
I feel like if I was going to do that now, I don't know that I'd have the balls to pull it off.
Right.
You know, but I guess if you're young and dumb and you don't understand the consequences yet, then, you know, it's, I guess, possible.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, man. That's great, though. Like, I mean, like, obviously very scary at the time, but, you know, to know, to have that realization where you're like, man, this isn't right. This is not what's going to make me happy. And
Right.
That's, again, you know, for me, a lot of this is, this show is what makes me happy, music and stuff, and so that was kind of the whole thing, too. I'm kind of where you were at, where I was kind of burned out in my day job sort of thing, and, you know, I want to be more around music, so let's figure I'd do what makes me happy and talk about music and listen to music all the time, so... Haven't quite figured out how to get paid to do all this yet, but
so that's the trick.
All right, but yeah, it's a lot of fun though, that's for sure. So so you're playing and you're and then you decide you're going into I want to start recording and things and you said you interned at the Smith Lee.
Yep.
So how long are you doing all that before you decide to go on into your own?
So I did Smith Lee. I was there maybe 04 and 05. And then I got really lucky after that. So I was signed up to go an extra semester. I already had all the credits to graduate in 4 years. And I was signed up to do like more mass communication stuff, some video and just to kind of like sort of broaden my horizons a little bit and skill sets. But an engineer that I had worked with at Smith Lee took a job at another studio in St. Louis called Four Seasons Media Productions. And one day out of the blue, he called me and said, hey, you know, I was wondering if you'd be interested in a job. And, I went, and it's a world-class facility, and, you know, there was a band operating out of there, and I was, absolutely, you know, so I dropped all those classes, you know, and graduated, and never looked back, you know, I mean, and I always think of that moment as like a, I always call it a piano falling out of the sky, just because it was such a fortunate break, you know. I'm very grateful for that to have happened. And, you know, I worked at Four Seasons for probably four or five years. You know, worked with some great producers and engineers and musicians there. And that was next level, too, for me, because, you know, it was all this, like, professional gear, like a deep microphone locker, you know, world-class rooms, and there was touring involved, so that led to touring, and we, you know, I think we hit, eventually we hit 40, all 48 continental states, which is awesome. I mean, you know, looking back on it now, I probably would have gotten more out of the experience of traveling, but I was, I guess, I don't know, 25 or so, and I feel like when you're in your 20s, you don't know anything, you know, you just don't know any better.
Right.
So that job was a piano falling out of the sky for me. Of, you know, it just happened to land in your front yard. It's like I didn't seek it out. You know, I didn't apply for it. Mm-hmm. It just happened to know the right people who met the right people and got the reference. Yeah. So that was pretty incredible.
Right on.
Yeah.
Very cool. So that was you're doing. You were touring, doing front of house?
We did. We started out doing clubs, and I was doing front of house and monitors from front of house, which is not ideal, but, you know, fine. We did it. It was, you know, we did little bigger bars and smaller clubs, I think is probably how I'd describe it. And eventually we started playing. We did, like, 25 or 30 shows with Lynyrd Skynyrd. And so that was like, that was another, I mean, I never would have seen that coming.
Sure.
And that was another thing for me where I wasn't, looking back on it, I wasn't ready. I wasn't really ready for Four Seasons either. But, you know, you just show up and you do the best you can and, you know, you skin your knee, you get back up and you just, like we just said, you know, you try not to make the same mistakes over and over again.
Yeah.
And on those, the Skynyrd stuff, I was doing only monitors, because if I had done front of house, I would have just been, I mean, I'm sure I was not great at monitors either, because that was just, you know, like I said, my first time in that big of a pond, you know, so to speak, so that was pretty crazy. But
yeah, I read on your website there was some mentioned Skynyrd and also you did some stuff with ZZ Top, is that right?
Yeah, that was, we didn't really tour with them. I think we happened to play 3 or 4 shows in a row. So, you know, that's enough to say.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah, did you meet those guys at all, or?
Or was it? Sort of, yeah.
Pretty
it's
business?
It's not kind of like, it's not so much like, hi, Mr. ZZ Top. Like, I'm Mike, nice to meet you. It wasn't quite like that. It was just kind of like, you know, you see him in passing. It's like, hey, guys, what's up? You know, right. Thanks for playing a show with us. And that's kind of the level of meeting them that it was, but still pretty cool, man. Like, ZZ Top is like one of like the coolest bands ever, you know?
Billy Gibbons, excuse me. Billy Gibbons, like, to me is like the epitome of cool. Like, that guy is just like super chill.
Super chill. Yeah.
And just, you know, great songs and hell of a guitar player.
Yep.
And just, but yeah, he just, the way he presents himself and talks and everything is just like, just so cool. But yeah, I have a friend, Marquise Knox, local blues artist, and he got to go, and he'd done a lot of touring himself and done things, but he got to go to Kansas City, I believe, a while back and open up for him, and you know, just following through on Facebook with Marquise, like the pictures and things, he got to meet him, and then like they were hanging out talking blues backstage, and then like when you know, ZZ Top took the stage after Marquise, they, you know, shout him out and stuff, talked about how great he was, and like,
yeah, cool.
I mean, you know, of course, like, that's taking it to the next level and showing their character, you know, the fact that like they care about these guys instead of just, you know, I've heard a lot of people, of course, you know, they get to open for somebody and then like they don't even meet them, they don't you know, they don't care who's opening that show. They're going on doing their thing. And
all right, at best they'll get thanks to all the opening bands.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Not even say the name.
Yeah. So I thought that was really nice, and it made me even appreciate ZZ Top more that they you know, did that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, man. So that's a pretty good gig hanging out with.
That was crazy. That was a very trial by fire. For me, as an engineer, and I guess as a person too, because, you know, when you travel that much and you haven't really traveled before, it's, you know, you get to see how other cities are and what the people are like there, and, you know, it's just an eye-opening experience for sure.
Yeah.
So that was, very thankful to have had that experience.
Yeah. So you, When does Redwood get going, you think?
That was, let's see, not till a little while later.
Yeah.
So after I stopped working at Four Seasons, I still worked for that band, but I was as a guitar tech and not as audio anymore. Yeah. That was maybe another year of that, and that was a little bit new stuff too, you know. Of course, I had the guitar background, so that helped.
Sure.
So that was another year or two of that, still touring, but just not doing so much audio. Still kind of like, as a hobby, I would pay attention to it and like practice on my own stuff and all that. And then maybe 2010 or 11, I started working in theater at UMSL, at the 2L Performing Arts Center.
Yeah.
Which is a great facility. So that was more obviously doing audio there. Front of house, some monitors, some general stagehand stuff. And then in maybe, I guess it was 11 or 12, I started like really getting serious and like trying to create a room in which I could make records.
Right.
And then at that point, I built all these panels that you can see that people listening to this cannot see.
Right.
But if you go to redwoodstudios.net,
hey-o.
Yeah, there's some pretty good photos up there of the space, so if you want to check it out,
yeah,
go check it out.
Beautiful facility, man. I really, really look sharp in here, and it's cool to be in.
Yeah, you know. Thanks. That was a long project of maybe 6 months of research and, you know, fabric shopping and all that sort of stuff that, you know, that it takes to build this stuff. And I'm not a carpenter. I'm probably the world's worst carpenter. But I, you know, just hammered some frames together and put the stuff in there and hung it up. And it, you know, helped. It's fine. It makes some good sound of stuff in here. But, so that was maybe 2012, 2011, something like that. And, I sponsored the Battle for Point Fest at Pops for maybe two or three seasons. Got some bands in from that. You know, sort of networking, just being at all the shows, hanging out, meeting people, meeting bands and stuff. And that was maybe a couple years ago I stopped doing that. And I guess that kind of brings us up to speed here with where we are right now.
Yeah. So, recently, like, the one that probably really started hearing your name a lot more was Forgetting January. I know those guys, gotten to know them pretty well over last...
Yeah, there was a point in time, I think, it was probably when we first started talking, like, you interviewed two or three of the bands that I've been working with in, like, the same month.
Right.
Which I thought was...
Yeah, that's a lot of, you know, like, and then that's a lot of how the show works, is like...
Yeah.
You know, and I have one band on, and they say, "Hey, oh, you should, you know, our friends here," and that kind of thing. So, I know a lot of these guys, but that's how it led. You know, they just starts connecting the dots, and then of course it leads back to the studios or where, you know, the next thing. So,
yeah, that's great. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, you know,
very organic.
Right.
But yeah, Forgetting January, they're becoming long friends of mine. That was the second year I did the Point Fest thing, so that was probably, I don't even know, maybe 2013 that they first came in here. Did their first album, six songs. Very very organic approach for me as far as like the tones and stuff go. It's very natural sounding. Then they came back for the second one, and it's a little more modern. And then we're working on right now their third album, which is going to be on purpose as modern as possible. You know, the last one was still trying to keep a little bit of natural feel, but not that we're trying to make it sound fake. I don't mean to say that, but just really going for a modern style of production
on
this new one. It's going to be cool. They're improving as a band and songwriters and stuff too. So
sure, yeah, they're. Their new EP that you mentioned just came out a little while back, Friendship is a Dying Art, now available. With the single, the one I first got my attention that day, and was Ballad of Paul Revere. And like, it was a great tune, man. And like, I really like, they were telling me like there's like a fox scream you guys put in there at the beginning.
that was pretty. It was a nice touch, you know. It really set the vibe for that track.
Yeah.
And that song turned out to be just like really hauntingly epic.
Yeah.
Like, they're not really cool.
For sure. Yeah. Great song.
Yeah.
There's one thing you ought to know.
But yeah, so check that out if you haven't. Get on there and pick up a copy. So like I said, well, I know those guys pretty well. Who else have you recently had here in the studio?
This year, or last year, I should say, I did the third album for River City Sound, which they're also longtime buddies. You know, I've done all of their records.
Mm-hmm.
Met them through the Pops Point Fest thing. They actually had won the prize, you know, the free song here that I was offering, and that was the first time I worked with them, and they came back. We did Mississippi Nights, which is just totally slamming. Very in your face, very, very raw, very aggressive, very huge, very punchy. Of course, great songs. Then they came back and did Stand Your Ground, which is cool, a little more rock and roll. And then for this third record that we did called Great American Flood, I was a little more involved as kind of as a traditional producer would be. You know, would go to their rehearsals and offer them, I don't want to say notes because that sounds critical, but I would just kind of tell them what I thought as a listener, you know, what I would want to happen within each song, and just, you know, throw out ideas with them. You know, hey, maybe play this chorus again here, or take this bridge and, you know, bring it down at first, but then build it and double it and make it longer. Like, just give them all kinds of notes like that, and just, like, let them chew on it. And I would go back in, you know, maybe 6 weeks or something like that, and they would have digested that food for thought a little bit and just kind of let those ideas sort of seep in naturally. Because, you know, I wanted their take on my ideas, not my ideas to be in their songs. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
If it, because I always want the band to sound like the band. If the band wants me to put my stamp on it, I'm happy to do that because I love collaborating with people and musicians, and I love that back and forth, that dynamic when you trust the artist and the artist trusts you, and you're both very competent at what you can do. That's the holy grail of creative space to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just to be able to, if you're working on a song, and let's say you've got a vocalist, you can just say, you're recording their vocals, and you just say, hey, I think it would be cool to put a harmony on this phrase. And you don't even really talk about it. You just hit record, and they can do it. You know, maybe a couple of takes and figure it out and do it. It's, you know, they're not struggling to either hit the notes or to think up new parts or anything like that. Like, you can trust them to execute your idea, and it'll be cool. And they can put their spin on it too. So that's where you get the real magic of, like, I don't know if chemistry is the right word, but you get both of your ideas fused into one idea.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then that's what ends up on the tape, or the disc these days. But yeah, so that's what we had with Great American Flood, and we have had, of course, worked together on on two albums and a single. Oh, I also forgot they came in. They did a live video shoot here too. So we had done four projects together already by that point. So we had obviously built up a dynamic and a, what's the word? Relationship.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Amongst each other. And so we had that trust together. And I think that album is just fantastic. Like, especially that song Ghost. I think Waves is awesome. If you haven't seen them or heard them, go check them out.
Yeah. I've seen them a little bit through Pops, like I said. And with, I think they've done, maybe, I think two, maybe more, out there at the Ink Spot block parties also.
Yeah, they did play those.
Yeah.
So they called a hiatus last year. I was really bummed about that. But they used to play just a ton. They would play all the time.
Mm-hmm.
At all kinds of places. But yeah, if you haven't heard them, go check them out. You know, they call it punk rock and roll, because they got punk roots, but it's kind of, Corey's almost got this folky kind of style of songwriting.
Right.
But I guess if you play it loud enough and with the right attitude, that's how you add the punk rock and roll
sure
to it. So,
yeah, some of the stuff, I don't like again. I'm not terribly familiar with all of it, but some of it I kind of got like that a little bit of that like Dropkick Murphys feel to it bit, something like that.
Totally, especially the first record.
Yeah,
The Great American Flood is I would say it's more mature, mm-hmm. and it's got a little more atmosphere, a little more mood. I feel like it's probably their deepest record. It's really good. Masterpiece is the word I'm thinking of, but you know, I don't want to say it just to like throw it out there and abuse the term, but you know, yeah. It's a fantastic album. Go check it out.
Yeah. I think, like you're describing, I think like it's pretty ideal, as a producer, engineer, and you know, you're almost become that fourth, fifth, sixth band member, whatever it is, you know.
Like yeah, totally.
You know, you're offering your input to these songs, or and you might even you know, you saying you have drum and guitar background and all this kind of stuff. You're able to kind of, you know, play a little lick, you know, show them, hey, let me do something like this or whatever, yeah. But just offering those creative ideas. Another band member.
Yeah, being able to understand where they're coming from as a player, not only like artistically, but also when they're in the hot seat recording their takes, you kind of know what they might be going through to try to execute the part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having that background with Connell Road and the Macaroni Tree, you know, I've just, like I said, I've been self-recording, I've been recording my little guitar ideas for years.
Yeah.
So that's very helpful to like, you know what that what they're going through when they're in the hot seat.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Let's talk Connell Road. You said you mentioned that, and then like we said earlier too. You guys put out a record 2016.
Yeah, we put out two parts. We decided to do our new record. Ghostlight, we decided to put it out in four EPs instead of, you know, one gigantic release, just to make it's just to pace ourselves, you know, because mm-hmm. We'd probably still be working on it if we didn't break up those parts.
Yeah.
So we put out two parts of it last year, and we're going to put out two parts this year. And I think once we get the fourth part finished, we're going to make a CD of it, but for now it's digital only.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll press a hard copy and we've talked about doing a CD release show, that's a little bit different than what we had done before, where it's kind of more of a listening party than, you know, a loud rock and roll show where we don't really get time to talk to anybody or see our friends and,
yeah,
you know, it might be catered, who knows, like. Just something a little bit different, a little more intimate, right. A little more hangouty. Maybe we'd play, you know, a 30-minute acoustic set or something, but something with a little vibe and a little less in your face, you know, but maybe more like a glass of fine wine than a shot of whiskey, if you can use that metaphor.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I've done both. But, you know, I've done obviously many of the concerts. Release parties like that where, you know, just throw a big, get all your friends on there and stuff. And, but I've also had those where it's more, you know, for the fans, you know, get a handful, whatever, 100 something fans or something like that, that want to come out and listen to the record and hang out. And, you know, those are fun for me as a fan to get more of that intimate one-on-one experience with the bands.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you're going to get that, maybe a rare moment with like I said, an acoustic performance or whatever it might be. But as a fan, I think you appreciate that a lot more than just another concert. Even though the concerts are great, but
right.
Just that rarity that you don't get a lot of those moments there.
Yeah, we had actually been rehearsing a lot more acoustically, probably because we don't really have a full time bass player, you know. So that's a hurdle in and of itself. To not have an official full rock band lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been just kind of playing acoustically just to play.
Sure.
And to, you know, to... It also helps to kind of give you a fresh... Keeps you thinking about music in other ways. Yeah. You know, it helps you to, like, how would I, you know, to think about how you might translate a loud riff rock song. I mean, just break it down into chords. Chords and vocal. And that's kind of all you get. Maybe, you know, we got a drummer, so there's a little bit of percussion too, but just, like, basically breaking it down to the bare bones is a really cool exercise as a musician to try to figure out how to do that.
Yeah,
you know, it's a different set of chops.
So no dates currently for
no, not yet. We took you know, the holidays kind of slow. Just
right.
Life gets in the way. You know, we're sure. All adults now, so that's just what happens.
Yeah.
But I think we're gonna kick off again here pretty soon.
All right.
You know.
Keep an eye out for those other two EPs coming soon, and you guys on Bandcamp and stuff, or
we are on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Google, the major players,
right?
And we also have an album on Tidal too. Our very first album got picked up by a, I don't know if you'd call it a label, but it's a group.
Yeah.
You know, put that on Tidal, and so that's available too.
Right on. Let's tell me about Macaroni Tree.
The Macaroni Tree is a little I guess you'd call it a side project of mine. Where it's kind of everything that doesn't really fit in Accountable Road. It started off as being kind of like lighter rock songs, you know, that that didn't have what I refer to as the Carnival Road smirk. You know, yeah. It's just kind of got this, it's a smirk that C Road has about it. That's what I call it. But that music is a little more delicate. It's just the tone of it is not right for Carnival Road. So, their instrumental songs of whatever the music may be. A lot of it was kind of rock based or maybe a little bluesy based or it's really anything goes as far as what the music style is. And it's all instrumental, unless I can find a singer to sing on it, which I did. I did do one song called Falcon Hawk, which is kind of it's an 80s style throwback, but it's all, you know, modern drop tune guitars and stuff. And a friend of mine, Scott Reed, who is from Kansas, plays in a band called End of Story. They're also a throwback kind of hard rock band, three piece, ripping guitar solos, very melodic, a lot of vocal harmonies, very tastefully done. Really cool. If you're into that sort of thing, go check them out. Anyways, he did all the vocals and did a shredding, just ripping guitar solo on it.
Yeah,
I might give you that song
right.
To post just because it turned out cool. But yeah, basically the Macaroni Tree it's all the music that I write that doesn't go to Carnival Road.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's kind of the fun part about it is that, you know, I've got like a blues song, I've got like a little emo rock song, and the most cohesive little bit that I've put together with that has been like an acoustic guitar bass thing where I basically put, like, my terminology with electronic music is not very good, so I'll just say they're dubstep beats, even though it's not exactly that. But it's like electronic production and synths and, you know, wub-wubs and electronic drums and programmed drums and, you know, maybe even like some oohs and ahs vocally. We'll make it on there.
Thank you.
That is actually on Spotify under Macaroni Tree. It's the EP is called Anthetic. It's three songs. It's cool. It's definitely different for me. So that was fun to put together.
Is this you ever think you would perform it live at all, or is it mainly
probably just not? I mean, I don't know how I would do it.
Yeah,
it would
just a studio.
It would would be super lame if I did it live, because it would be basically a laptop. And I'd be playing acoustic guitar with a laptop. I just feel like that would not be something worth watching.
Right.
You know? And it just, I don't know.
Maybe if you had to find that singer or something, maybe then it'd give it more dynamic to make it a little more of a proper live show.
I would need more people for sure to make it work. But, I mean, it's, as far as that goes, that's definitely just a studio studio project. So,
where does the Macaroni Tree name come from?
That was actually, I think it was my wife's idea to call it that, because I had this in my parents' basement. I had this around Christmas time. Found this like decoration thing I probably made in grade school or something, and I just thought it was the ugliest thing. It was like a it's like a cone, you know, cone-shaped thing with, like, macaroni noodles and stuff, like, glued to it. Right. So it's, you know, stands up on a desk or whatever. And it was like a red ball on top or something. And the whole thing is, like, spray-painted gold for some reason. I just thought it was the ugliest thing. But, like, my wife said that there was actually, like, for a kid, it was actually pretty good because, you know, there was design intent, I guess you could say. There's like little, you know, I made little patterns and whatever. I didn't just like slap it all together so I could go outside,
all right,
you know, to get it done as fast as possible. And so that's kind of where it came from, you know, based on a third grade Christmas art project.
I don't know why people haven't taken macaroni art past the elementary school, but you know, they really honed in on the macaroni art in elementary.
I guess so. I mean, you know, it's where would you show it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Can't be outside because it'll either cook or get eaten.
All right,
you know.
But no, yeah, of course, we all been there, man. We all have macaroni necklaces or whatever and different things that we made in school. But that's fun. That's cool. That kind of. Having that personal connection to it.
Yeah.
Not just namegenerator.com or something
Or, yeah, random point your finger in the dictionary.
Yeah.
See what you get.
All right. Well, cool. So we got, like I said, you're busy recording bands all the time and, you know, playing out with Carnival Road and working on your Macaroni Tree.
Yep.
What other stuff? I mean, what other stuff do you like to find yourself doing in the spare time?
Well, I play. I love playing roller hockey.
Yes,
might be my favorite thing that I do.
Right.
For a while, I liked it more than music, you know. But I think I'm back to having a nice honest balance to that. You know, I got a new daughter. She's almost one. That's an incredible experience. Hey, so
congratulations.
Yeah, man. Thanks. That's awesome. She's great. So,
do you find any inspiration from her? I don't know. I just imagine like it's one of the craziest things, like to become a father or, you know, parent and thing. You know, it's just like I'm more of a lyrics guy, singer songwriter, so I like a lot of that stuff. But you hear a lot of these guys that, you know, they're motivated to write lyrics because you know, they're, you know, inspired by their kids or whatever. They'll write a story, but you know, along with that. And do you ever get anything like that? You know, you kind of come up with something.
I've been so into the world of the last couple of years. I've been so into producing and recording. But I haven't really been doing as much writing as I used to. I feel like that's going to even itself out at some point. You know, I'll start writing more, but so as for now, not really.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's not to say that it doesn't
affect my mood positively all the time.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's a brand new feeling, you know, that you didn't ever really have before.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like this. For me, it's a very peaceful. For me, it just makes me feel peaceful.
Yeah.
You know.
I always also hear like these stories like like Jim Brewer makes jokes about it about how like all these bands like, you know, now that they're older and have kids and things, putting out like kid albums and stuff, like you know, he does obviously all the impressions, but like Ozzy Osbourne doing London Bridges Falling Down or something like that, and Metallica doing Bingo or something like that, and like whatever, and then of course he goes in, and one of the most famous ones he does is AC/DC doing the Hokey Pokey, and like
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, it's a great bit, and of course, like I said, he does all the full on impressions of, you know, James Hetfield and Brian Johnson and stuff, and like and Ozzy, and but yeah, well, it's just like it's something. It is something that happens. These, you know, a lot of musicians have children, and then they kind of put out something more catered towards that sometimes and things. But do you ever feel you maybe put out start writing any more children music or anything around this? Or
probably not. Yeah. I mean, I'm not very good at doing really, really happy stuff.
Yeah,
it's just, I don't know why. It's just not what I do. It makes me feel uncomfortable a little bit to to write something that's just like, it's just so gay. You know, I mean that in like the traditional word, the use of the word. It's just, I just can't do it.
Right.
I mean, everything, if you lock me in a room with no windows and no doors and just a studio, then what I would do is, what I would write is, it just tends to naturally have this like moodiness to it, which is definitely not very kid friendly.
Right.
So that's, I can't imagine that I would do that. I can't picture it.
Sure. I saw Aaron Lewis one night at the pageant of Stained, and he's, you know, his stuff now is a little more country.
Yep.
And he had one of my favorite quotes ever, and he's like, so, you know, of course everything he speaks is like real monotone, like, you know, he's kind of always down and but he said something to like, so he's like, so yeah, I fucked up and I wrote a happy song. And, you know, and I just thought that was such a funny way of looking at, like, you know, that it was a mistake that he wrote the happy song, because everything else is, like you're saying, is all a lot of very dark and depressed kind of things and more moody music like that. But now his newer country stuff's got a little more happiness to it, I guess. And, anyway, just an incredible show, but just one of the funniest things ever.
Just the surprise of that coming at him saying that is probably
maybe, you never know, maybe one day.
Well, speaking of country, I actually never would have thought that I would have produced pop country before, but a client of mine, we're doing it, you know. This guy named Corey, he first came in to do a couple of karaoke tracks. And I'd mentioned to him that I had done this other project for this truck driver who wanted me to record him singing songs that he liked over his iPod. And I talked him into letting me recreate the instrumentals, so you wouldn't hear the other singer underneath him singing. And so I was telling him about that project, and then, you know, okay, cool, I'll see you later. Short session, and then like months later he emailed me and said, hey, I wrote a song, remember you said you could write some music, here's the song, you know. He sent me the vocal and told me what he wanted to do, like what he liked to listen to, and so I sent him a track, and it's pop country, man. I never would have thought, like, but it's really, really super fun, to work with a singer-songwriter, like, solo, and just not just, like, you know, a band.
Right.
It's a whole different experience, let alone the fact that it's country. I mean, you know, it's about as much country as Taylor Swift's last record was country.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So there's kind of no traditional elements in there, but it's...
Yeah, there's nothing traditional about country anymore. Like, it's like...
Yeah.
There's, if you listen to the radio country now, I mean, there's guys making traditional, you know, country. You've got Sturgill Simpson and Chris Stapleton and all these guys that are kind of keeping that, you know, alive. But, yeah, everything on the radio now is pop or rock music, really. I mean, like, Jason Aldean and Eric Church and these guys are writing, like, rock records, but, and they just sang with a little twang to them and stuff when they, you know, so.
And that's kind of what this is. Like, it's definitely country because of the way that he sings it, but the music is, there's no banjo, there's no fiddle, there's none of that stuff.
No slide guitar, or, you know,
Dobro
or steel. And
Yeah, but I mean, it's super fun, man. It's,
on the map, and baby, that's where we're at. I pick you up and then we ride out. Can head to my favorite hideout. Oh, I'll pay and let's go down this two-lane road, baby, where nobody knows. I'm flying down the highway. I got my main girl right beside me. Hey! I load it up and we go, and we go, and we go, and we can roll, baby. Cruise on. Girl, you can sip that. Lay on the hood of my car, baby, and we can gaze at the moon. Cheers to the stars, baby. I see the moonlight glistening on the gloss on your lips while I'm kissing them. I'm getting lost in your eyes. I'm getting tempted by your touch, turned on by your smile, girl. Around here it's getting late out, but you say you want to stay out. Well, hop in, let's go, and we back on the road, but we ain't going home. Perfect spot if you ask me. Let's get in the backseat and go full track speed and get down, baby. We can go real crazy, and I know what you like. And you've been riding, so I guess I'll let you drive it now.
I'm flying down the highway. I got my main girl right beside me. Load it up and we go, and we go, and we go, and we can roll, baby.
Cruise on and the windows down. Wide open road and my music loud.
When I was touring, we actually had done a handful of dates with some country acts, so going into it, that was kind of what I had in my head as what the track was going to be. And So I had it. It was, you know, kind of maybe more like a Jason Aldean, like very, very rock guitar.
Yeah.
And then I pulled up the top 40 Spotify modern country thing and found out how dated I was in my approach. So kind of scrapped all that, kept the chords, but just replaced it all with synths. And it was great. I thought it turned out super cool. Like, that's another talking about creative spaces earlier that I like to be in. A piece of a creative space I like to have is when you're both going somewhere, you don't know where you're going. And you're just kind of, you're wandering around like, is this cool? I don't know. Let's try it. Because then you're creating from a very honest, naive place. You're not, you know, there's no preconceptions about it because you've never done it before. You don't know what you're going for. So it's just pure honest creation. I love that stuff.
Yeah, man.
You know, not knowing what you're going for is cool. It's great. I mean, having a target's cool too, but you know, to create something brand new for yourself, that's almost kind of the holy grail.
Sure.
You know, is to.
Well, there's a lot of, for me, again, going back to what I'm doing with this show, it's a lot of how this show works. I push record. I don't really know where the conversation is going to go.
Exactly. Yeah.
We might lay out a little framework, a couple bullet points that we want to hit, but yeah. A lot of times we let the conversation take over and see where it takes us, and a lot of times if we go way off than we ever met, like I never would have thought we would get to where we were when we started, and that's always a lot of fun for me as a host, and then keeping it fresh and everything is not really having any idea where I'm doing or where I'm going. And
yeah, it's really liberating too, because once you box yourself in to say, okay, I'm gonna write a song and it goes exactly like this,
right?
You kind of box yourself in, and what's the fun in that?
Yeah,
sure.
It's got the single right now?
Yeah, we haven't released it yet, but we'll throw it on this podcast. It'd be cool.
All right.
I think we're just waiting for the right time to release it. It's definitely a summer feel type of song, and it's gray, constantly gray these days. So it's we're gonna wait, I think, to release it. But we're doing a few originals, doing a cover too, and it's the cover song is nuts. Like it turned out. Again, no idea where I was going with it, and it's just turned out super cool. He's coming in a couple of weeks to record vocals, so that'll be finished pretty soon.
Yeah, very cool, man. Well, that's that's crazy to think that. I don't know. I mean, it's not that crazy, I guess, because the same way I listen to music. I listen to rock, I listen to blues and rap and everything. But you sound like you're making a lot of different stuff. You're from country to having. Some metal stuff, and then kind of a road rock stuff and pop punk and all kind of, covering a lot of different stuff there.
Yeah, one thing I definitely don't want to do is make the same record over and over again.
Yeah.
I want to.
Keeps it fresh.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so. Yeah. it was all pretty well, all the information, michaelbivens.net.
Mbivens.net.
Oh, Mbivens.
I posted that yesterday. It's a brand new website.
Yeah.
Mbivens.net. And then redwoodstudios.net, carnivalroad.com, and I think that's all my websites.
Yeah, and of course, Facebook fan page as well. You can keep up on there.
Michael Bivens, producer engineer, I think, or audio engineer producer, something like that.
But a lot going on over here. A lot of great music coming out of the studio. Again, like I said, Forgetting January and that record. Came out a little bit ago. Really good stuff. And any other good records you recommend that they go pick up?
I mixed an album by the Von Drucks.
Yeah.
That was totally different for me.
Yeah, they're more country,
little
folk.
Little country, and, yeah. Little classic rock vibe on that record.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
What else it's here?
A buddy of mine, I don't even know how you say his name, but I think it's Ithra, super black metal, death metal thing I did in 2009. That just came out in hard copy, so that's called The Evening Red.
Okay.
That's a cool thing. Von Drucks, Giants in the Sky, Cannibal Road, Avex, River City Sound, and yeah, that's what we got.
Keep you entertained for a while. Yeah, that Von Drucks episode was a lot of fun to hang with those guys.
Yeah, I work with Jeff at Two Hill. So,
yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah, he knows his audio for sure.
Yeah, so. Well, yeah, yeah. Check out all that stuff, and again, if you're in the market, you want to come record, reach out. Let's make it happen.
Yep.
Again, Michael or mbevins.net and redwoodstudios.net.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, thanks, man. I appreciate you taking some time. We're gonna drop in some tunes, so you can hear some of the stuff we've been talking about, and if you like it, go out and buy a copy or. On all your digital platforms where available. All right, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I lie awake, I dream of God knows what I want, who cares? they gotta catch afloat. The sun is high and bright. Those amorous girls making love real loud kept us up three-fourths the night. Kept us up three-fourths the night. Make our way to the gravel bar. A 10-mile float begins. Keep an eye out for the big white truck. That's the spot where the float trip ends. That's where it was supposed to end. And we were cruising along, paddling strong, come on. 2 hours in, surely that's not the end. Move on, let's move on, let's move on. Soaking up the sun, soaking up the beer. The crowd is thin and fast. Another takeout, but that's not us. Don't think that ours had passed. No, I don't think ours has passed. Dog is panting and Emily's done. No people inside for a while. An upstream battle that can't be won. We had found it for 24 miles.
Gonna be one hell of a ride. And Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.